walk deep into the middle of a wetland, and there are some sounds that you might expect to hear. The buzz of insects, maybe, or a great blue heron flapping its wings overhead. Country music probably doesn't make the list. But then, Kirkpatrick Marsh is a different kind of wetland.
We walk down to the end of the boardwalk here.
Patrick McGonigal is giving me a tour of Kirkpatrick Marsh, a jungle-like wetland that sits on the Rogue River in Maryland, not too far from a much bigger body of water.
It is a brackish tidal marsh. It's on the shore of the Chesapeake Bay, and it's been the subject of global change research for about the last 30 years, since 1986.
It's that last part that brings McGonigal, a biogeochemist at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center, here today. He's one of about a dozen researchers working on Kirkpatrick Marsh this afternoon, hence the radio, playing some country music to help the time go by. The scene seems laid back, but McGonigal has some serious things on his mind. Most of them revolve around sea level rise. He stops at a spot in the wetland where muddy water has collected into a pool.
These tidal wetland plants will have some optimum amount of flooding at which they grow the most. And if you flood them more, they'll grow less. And if you flood them less, they'll grow less.
Here, it's a good bet to expect more flooding. Researchers estimate that water levels on the bay will rise by about 2 feet by 2050. That's mostly because of climate change, driven by human activities. And it's a big deal for local wetlands. Because marshes are anchored in the water, even small changes to the surrounding sea level don't just make plants grow less. They can wash away entire wetland communities. Many marshes on the bay and elsewhere have already begun to disappear.
When we say they disappear, they convert to open water. Essentially, the plants drown. And when they drown, well, they're gone.
But there may be a way for this marsh to survive. Wetlands can outrun rising waters, McGonigal says.
In a marsh like this, when the elevation increases, that means the volume of soil is increasing.
McGonigal explains that wetlands like this one accumulate new layers of soil over time. Much of that soil comes from dead and decomposing plants that once grew on the marsh. It's a bit like adding food waste to a compost pile. And the end result is that marshes rise up out of the water, very slowly. Today, much of Kirkpatrick Marsh increases about 3 millimeters in elevation annually. Whether or not the marsh as a whole will be able to climb fast enough, faster than the rise of sea levels, isn't clear. But McGonigal and his colleagues suggest that this marsh might get help from an unlikely ally.
So if you guys do 12 and whatever you need, everybody else can go back to sorting the plants. It would be awesome and then we'll be done.
Thomas Moser has been out in the sun on Kirkpatrick Marsh for most of the day, along with his team of student research assistants. He's an ecologist at Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania and a colleague of McGonigal's. Today, he's collecting samples of grasses.
So this is Spartina patens, and this year we seem to be seeing a little bit more distichless spicata.
Those are two types of grasses that are native to wetlands around the Chesapeake Bay, also known as salt meadow cordgrass and saltgrass. But Moser also has his eye on plants that aren't from around here. Phragmites australis, known as the common reed, was brought to the United States from Europe in the late 1800s. Over the last few decades, it's begun to invade local wetlands at a fast clip.
Back in 1972, there were only two patches of Phragmites, and now the wetland has many, many pockets of Phragmites all over the place, and they just seem to be expanding more and more every year.
The plant isn't hard to spot. At this point in the season, it's mint green and taller than Moser by several feet. Many natural resource managers consider it a menace, in part because the reed displaces native marsh plants. But Phragmites might not be as harmful as many think, especially when you consider sea level rise. To make the point, Moser shows me several custom-built greenhouses, plunked into the middle of the marsh. They are a piece of an experiment funded partly by Marilyn C. Grant. The structures look like oversized telephone booths. Inside them, plants are growing. And in some of the chambers, Moser's team has tried to simulate the growing conditions that these plants might face in the future. We look inside one chamber, where researchers have roughly doubled the concentration of carbon dioxide gas, also known as CO2.
Your census. So that one's actually an elevated CO2. And interestingly, it looked like it has a lot of stems, but it actually has over 100 stems of Phragmites in there.
The Phragmites is growing at an impressive rate, Moser says. The elevated concentration of CO2 in this chamber is meant to represent what the atmosphere might look like decades into the future, if humans continue to pump greenhouse gases into the air. Those same gases are the primary cause of climate change. Many plants, including Moser's grasses, grow better if you give them more CO2. It's an important source of energy for all green life. But Phragmites does really well. Add in nitrogen, a common plant nutrient, and it does even better.
We can see it in our chambers right here that when we add nitrogen, we have a very explosive growth.
Which may actually be a good thing as far as sea level rise goes, says Patrick McGonigal.
It's certainly not good for plant species diversity, but maybe it is good from the perspective of coping with accelerated sea level rise.
To put it differently, because Phragmites grow so well, it builds up a lot of extra plant material on this wetland, or a lot of compost. Some of that compost will become new soil, and the scientists suspect could help Kirkpatrick Marsh to rise up faster than before, maybe even fast enough to escape sea level rise. Here on the marsh, McGonigal is testing just how helpful Phragmites could be in that race. He wouldn't recommend that wetland managers go around planting this reed, but he says it's possible that Phragmites, like many invasive species, could have both positive and negative impacts on bay ecosystems at the same time.
So, like a lot of things, this invasive plant is a mixed bag.
Now that's something you could write a country song about. This podcast was produced by Marilyn Siegel, part of the University of Maryland. We support scientific research, education, and public outreach to enhance the ecology of the Chesapeake Bay and the businesses and jobs that depend on it.